Welcome to Real Talk. As I change hats, I'm Susan McCabe, your host. Real Talk is the show about anything that piques curiosity, that is mine or yours. We welcome your suggestions. Send a note to realtalk@voiceofvashon.org with your ideas of what you'd like to know about. What piques your curiosity? Today, we're satisfying our curiosity about animal massage, which has been around for quite a while, and who knew? In fact, one of the headquarters for animal massage is right here on Vashon Island, and we have the Director of Education for Northwest School of Animal Massage, Lola Michelin. She's an accomplished animal massage practitioner. She's been providing massage for over 30 years and founded the Northwest School of Animal Massage 16 years ago. After obtaining a BSc in Animal Science from Michigan State University, Lola worked in the animal health care field as a veterinary technician, a pathology technician, and a zookeeper. She's a recognized authority on the subject of animal massage, appearing on radio and television shows nationwide, and she's been published in Modern Dog, Animal Wellness, Practical Horseman, Massage Magazine, and in an exclusive chapter of Women and Horses. There's a whole lot more to say about Lola, but we want to hear from her. Welcome, Lola.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. With Lola is Wendy Dahl. Wendy is a certified behavior adjustment training instructor. We're going to ask you exactly what that means pretty soon. A specialty in behavior modification for fear, aggression, and frustration. And she's been on the board of directors of the National Board of Certification for Animal Acupressure and Massage, as well as Vashon Island Pet Protectors. She's a member of the Animal Behavior Society and is a animal behavior consultant.
That is correct.
Welcome, Wendy.
Thank you. Good morning.
Thank you both for being here.
Our pleasure.
So, what is animal massage? Is it more than just petting Fido?
Definitely. Animal massage, as you mentioned, has been around for a long, long time. It started on the racetracks in Europe, primarily for use in horses. So it's often used for performance animals, but it has moved into the modern mainstream so that pets can benefit from the same types of things that you and I benefit from when we get a massage.
So how exactly does that work, and how do you know when a pet needs massage?
Well, a professional massage practitioner goes through a long period of training, so they're learning all about animal behavior for the species that they want to work with. So they learn how to, you know, recognize common pain patterns or common problems that dogs might experience or cats, and then they learn the techniques to address those. But even a pet owner can learn some of the basic skills so that just on a day-to-day basis, they can be providing some basic massage for their pets, as well as monitoring their pet's health, because that's kind of the key, is recognizing issues early when you have lots of treatment options.
Wendy, how would my dog, for instance, be behaving if he or she was in need of massage?
Well, I think any dog, or most dogs anyway, would probably benefit from some hands-on work. So it's a combination of what the owner knows about the dog and if they would be open to that kind of hands-on. I think that the benefits I've seen go the gamut from regular maintenance massage, which can help the owner and the practitioner learn of any insignificant or significant changes that might be going on with the dog, as well as doing rehab massage, trying to help a dog recover from surgery or injuries, and then also end-of-life body work as well.
Mm. This sounds a lot like what we do with people.
Absolutely.
So how did this practice originate? Where did it start?
Well, there's actually evidence back in ancient Chinese people used massage to prepare their horses for war. So we found texts with like acupressure and acupuncture recipes, and also with massage protocols for preparing horses for war. So it really has tradition long, you know, centuries ago. But it became more prevalent in the mid-century when they started using it at the racetracks in England and other countries in Europe. Here in the U.S., it was really brought onto the scene in the 1970s by a man named Jack Maher. He's kind of considered the father of modern animal massage here in, in the U.S. And since then, it's gained a lot of popularity. With the horses, it's been pretty long-standing therapy for performance horses and working horses. In the dog and cat realm, it's more recent, maybe the last decade, that it's become popular for pet owners. And part of that is because pets have changed their role in from an agrarian society where dogs were outside tending the livestock to being, you know, household members and members of the family. We still have livestock dogs, of course, too, and, mm-hmm. and they benefit from massage for other reasons.
So it sounds like this started as a function for humans.
Correct.
So that horses would continue their work in the human society.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's changed with the role of pets. Has it changed with horses? Again, how do I know if my horse needs massage?
Well, one thing we see in horses and dogs is mutual grooming. So massage isn't unique to humans. Animals massage each other in their own way, even in the wild. So many of us have experienced a massage at the paws of our cats. They use kneading and compressions and things to soothe themselves and to care for each other. Certainly primates are known for grooming each other in a massage-type fashion. So it was really a natural progression to go from providing massage for humans to providing massage for animals, particularly as I think people think about massage sometimes as a last resort when they start to see their pets decline, maybe mm-hmm. in their later years. Mm-hmm. But then once they've been exposed to massage, we often get people, you know, coming with their next puppy and starting the process very early on, because it's never too early to start with massage.
And an important part of becoming a professional in this field is learning about animal behavior and signals that animals are giving. So not only to help an owner understand if their animal would benefit from that, but also during a massage. There are subtle signs or not so subtle signs that you can look for where the dog, the horse, whatever animal is being worked on will be telling you if they're comfortable or uncomfortable.
How, if at all, does animal massage correct animal behavior? Does it? Can it be used to do that? Like if a dog is aggressive, is there perhaps a physical issue behind that? Or is there something that can be done with a dog that has a bladder problem?
Mm-hmm. Well, it definitely can influence those conditions, physical or otherwise. And the extent of that is dependent on both the dog and the practitioner, of course. We don't, as practitioners, we don't diagnose or do any prescriptive services. Those are the realm of the veterinarian, but we work closely with veterinarians. When we know there's an existing problem, we can tailor the massage to that. If we detect things in our session that are of concern, maybe a dog is exhibiting some pain to our handling or even providing us subtle signals of frustration or concern on their part, then we can certainly bring that to the owner's attention and recommend a vet visit so that we can tailor the future sessions more accordingly. But definitely, I've seen tremendous changes with animals when they have, and as you mentioned, sometimes behavioral issues are connected to a physical issue.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're not. But massage can be an important tool in managing both.
I'd like to bring another voice into our conversation. Sure. Our engineer, Steve Allen, is also a big dog person. And you said you mm-hmm. had a question, Steve.
Yeah, well, I just recently had a Rottweiler pass, but he was a mm-hmm. rescue dog from the Humane Society, got him 2 years ago. And ironically, he had two issues. He had a behavioral issue, which I think was more of his upbringing, and he had a urinary issue, which was probably could have been helped with massage. And I think one thing that, as dog owners, we look at our lives and how we deal with pain and how dogs deal with it and communicate it is different mm-hmm. than how we do it. And how they show discomfort, you know, it may not look like much discomfort at all to us, but it's discomfort to them. So a lot of, you know, as a dog owner and looking at some of the health issues, you know, I am more, especially this round with my latest round mm-hmm. of dogs, more trying to understand how they display, you know, their needs and their need for therapy or health. And I feel that if I would have had the Rottweiler massaged, that we would have discovered some of the issues with his kidney.
Yeah. You know, I often think back horses that I've owned over my life. I always think, oh, if I knew now, what if I knew then what I know now. Yeah. But I wouldn't know what I know now had I not had that experience with that horse or that. So that's been really helpful in being able to say, okay, well, that animal was kind of an entry to better understanding for the next one.
Yeah.
But it can be really difficult. You know, herd animals or pack animals, they are naturally inclined to hide their pain. And so some, you know, and then there's personality differences. Some dogs will be very demonstrative if they're uncomfortable. Others could be uncomfortable and we may not see any difference in their behavior until we actually do some assessments or, you know, physical contact might reveal things that we don't see with our eyes.
Now, that's a curiosity. What is it about pack animal culture that encourages them to hide their pain? Why do they do that?
The working breed, I think.
Well, but also in the wild, you don't want to show that you have an illness or that you are ill. Mm-hmm. If that happens, then other animals can take advantage of that.
Yeah. Or it can attract predators.
It's showing weakness.
Mm-hmm. Right. And with working dogs like Rottweilers, they're so stoic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you may not get those signals that something is seriously wrong until it's very serious. So it's certainly not that you were neglectful at all. And like Lola said, which I've certainly learned, every animal teaches you to help, how to help the next ones, yeah, or how to be more aware, more insightful.
Yeah. Kind of like
passed.
First and second wives, first really and second husbands. You're always better than the second one.
Yeah, they've all got different personalities, right?
Maybe not. Some of them show pain, some of them don't.
I just rescued another Rottweiler a couple weeks ago.
Hooray.
From the Humane Society, again, the exact same place, and just 180 degree different. Her temperament is so sweet, and you know she was raised in a house.
Yeah.
She came with 1 month of free health pet insurance, and I have continued that.
Insurance has been a game changer for the industry, really.
Tell us about that. How so?
Well, there's a number of good pet insurance policies out there. Some of them cover massage, particularly if it is prescribed by the veterinarian. But just the fact that people can have that peace of mind for, you know, a little bit per month, you don't have to worry about if you have to have an invasive surgery or like a knee surgery or a stomach obstruction or, you know, something that could be quite expensive, mm-hmm, and in the past may have caused an owner to be like, well, we can't really make this financial decision. Now that kind of alleviates some of that pressure. And you have access to more better treatments when you have insurance.
Yeah.
It's not perfect in every case, or it's not necessarily, you know, not every dog or cat is a candidate for insurance. But, you know, if I was getting a new dog, I certainly would insure them if I could.
I was actually surprised to hear you say that you do animal massage on cats.
Oh, yeah.
Because they seem to get it on their own.
Well, that is one of the big differences between cats and dogs is cats have a pretty well laid out life life plan. They spend about 30% of their day just massaging themselves and each other through their grooming. They spend another third of their day eating and sleeping. So I think I want to be a cat in my life.
Yeah, I was going to say.
My cat forces me to massage it.
Yeah, right.
That's what I was thinking.
You know, they
yeah
sit on your lap. Right. They demand the attention.
Yeah, and their tongues are pretty well equipped for the job.
Yeah.
Susan, the experience I've had with cats is when they're closer to end of life, and sometimes they're a little more open to having some body work, even if it isn't exactly hands-on, you can still provide some energy and healing by just having your hands near the body.
Oh.
And the cats that I've worked with have really responded and relaxed into that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've noticed that. One of our cats has been pretty aloof, and now that she's getting older, she's getting cuddlier.
Yeah.
Still on her terms. We're talking with Lola Michelin from Northwest School of Animal Massage and Wendy Dahl, an Island Animal Behavior Consultant, about animal massage here on the Voice of Vashon. And VOV support is provided by Vashon Center for the Arts. A Center for the Arts on Vashon Island, VCA, provides quality arts experiences for all ages and creates opportunities for artists to perform and exhibit their work. Find out what's happening at VashonCenterForTheArts.org. And VOV support is provided by Island Spring Organics. 40 years of organic non-GMO soy foods made daily right here on Vashon. Tours are available at www.islandspringorganics.com or at 206-463-9000. 1-800-878-9848. This is Real Talk, and we're talking real about animal massage. Lola, your mention of animal massage being covered by insurance, to my mind, and perhaps to others, kind of elevates the legitimacy of animal massage, and I know some people might question that.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's the same struggle that we've had in the human massage industry over the years. And there are different types of massage. You know, you might be getting massage strictly for tension relief or relaxation, and that might not qualify for, you know, medical type massage. But there are specific techniques and modalities that are used to address medical conditions. So those are sometimes covered by insurance. And it depends on the policy, and also usually requires a veterinarian prescription. But for instance, I've had horses, clients' horses who have, their insurance has covered massage for recovery from soft tissue injuries or bone injuries, but just their normal maintenance massage that they get once or twice a month might not be covered by that.
And in this state, we have a license through the state. We're also certified through the national board. So that, I think, helps to raise our that legitimacy factor.
It's kind of been a long struggle for you.
It has. There's been growing pains, but it always seems to be moving forward. And really, the best thing is that the people whose animals benefit from the massage tend to take the message out. And that also helps to, you know, gain some recognition for the profession and all that it can do.
I want to ask you both, and this is going to be kind of a curve for you. So I want you to think about stories of animals that you've worked with in massage where you saw miraculous change. Wendy's nodding her head over here. What story have you got for us?
Well, I love that the Rottweiler theme has already entered the picture this morning, because one that is very near and dear to my heart, a client started off, her Rottweiler was recovering from some knee surgery. And with my initial work on her, the first time she met me, she was a bit not real happy. I wouldn't say not real happy, but just not real seeking out my attention. A little aloof, wasn't sure why I was there. And so I just tried to make her as comfortable as possible and allowed her to come to me when she was comfortable. And I was able to do some hands-on work with her. By the seventh or eighth session, she was running up to me when I got there. She would lay on her back. I mean, it was gratifying for me to see that she welcomed me, but also to understand from the owner and from what I could see that she was benefiting. Her leg was moving much better. The other parts of her body that may have been compensating because of that injury had also improved as well.
Wow. That's a great story. From aloof to, I'm here for you.
Absolutely. Belly up. Yeah.
Belly up. Yeah. Take me. I'm yours. Yes. Lola, what story have you got?
I know. I'm trying to pick one because I think that's not an uncommon experience in our profession.
Really?
You get so much back from this work. It's a pleasure to give it, but you also get so much reward back when you see those types of cases. I would think some of my more interesting and more kind of for myself were very revealing were animals that I worked with at the zoo. So some of the exotic species that I've worked with, we had one comes to mind, a small marsupial called a Codamundi, and they live in packs, and they, as a group, they feed each other fruits and vegetables, and they groom each other a lot. So it has a lot to do with their social structure, and they thrive in that environment. Well, this one little Codamundi was born without hair, and he had a skin condition that he had all these kind of bumps and growths on his skin. So he wasn't very attractive. And he was always kind of itching himself. And so the other Codamundi wouldn't have anything to do with him. So he wasn't being fed. He wasn't being groomed. So he wasn't thriving. And he was sometimes having to be in the zoo hospital for care. And so when I went to teach a class at the zoo, they said, is there anything you can do for this little guy? And so we started working with him and just getting him used to touch. And then one of the zookeepers realized, well, could we massage him with something that would make him smell good or smell attractive to the other Codamundi? So we actually took little toothbrushes and we put essential oils on the toothbrushes and massaged him with those. And then the other Codamundi would come around and kind of poke at him and get, you know, so they could get the smell, and they started grooming him because he smelled like fruit and geraniums and fun things that they liked. And so then he became kind of the center of attention, and he was allowed back in the troop after that. So that was a really exciting story, because they were looking at, is his quality of life good enough if he can't be part of the troop? Or, you know, they were possibly considering euthanasia. So he was able to be rejoined with his family members.
Wow.
So
I thought you were going to say he grew hair and got beautiful.
Yeah, well, I wasn't
close
around long
enough
to see that, but yeah. he was beautiful in their eyes.
That's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing from a Kodamundi cultural perspective,
right?
As well as from the massage perspective. Steve, you had another question.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I had on behavioral issues. And again, going back to the one that I adopted that I felt had more of a behavioral issue. When I first adopted him, you know, the first 2 weeks in the house and around, it took him a good month to kind of come out of his shell before he started displaying his natural who he was. And I could kind of tell that he was meant, you know, whoever had him beforehand was having him protect something. He was always very protective. He would steal all the dog toys. And then as he got more comfortable on the house, he, I guess, would get more aggressive. And, you know, I've had Rottweilers. It's kind of my breed, so I kind of know how to handle them. But I probably should have started working with him. And I think even as people that get a puppy, a young puppy, sometimes instill the wrong behaviors, it's not as relevant when they're two or three, but once they're five or six, it really, you know, you realize you need to start making some changes. And it's not too late at that age to start working with them, is it?
It's never too late. And this is a much longer conversation that I could talk about for...
Yeah.
We might do that
again. Well, I mean, again, looking at how to change my dog's behavior, how long do you think I would have had to have worked on the one Rottweiler that I wanted to make him less protective and more enjoying of his life? And maybe that would have included massage.
My experience with rescue animals is that each one is an individual.
Yeah.
And you'll learn that it takes a certain amount of time for that particular dog. There's no set. I mean, usually within 2 weeks, the honeymoon's over and you're going to be seeing some interesting behaviors and that kind of thing. But once the dog is more comfortable in your home, you could certainly look into massage, or, you know, getting them out into public a little bit more as well, kind of doing things hand in hand.
What's a good way for a dog owner on Vashon to reach out for help with a behavioral issue? Should they maybe email VIPP and they can help connect?
One avenue.
or email Wendy Dahl.
Yeah.
Wendy, how do we reach you?
Well, Wendy at dahlbehavior.com. I'd be happy to answer your questions.
And it's Dahl, D-A-H-L, not D-O-L-L.
That is correct. Yes.
Although she is.
She is a doll. That's true. We only have 5 minutes left, but when we were first talking about this before today, one of the subjects that came up was the spiritual side of animal massage. Mm-hmm. And I think, Lola, you had mentioned some comments from shamans. Am I combining those two incorrectly? Yeah. What is the spiritual side of animal massage?
Well, so I'm also a Reiki practitioner, and a lot of people who work with animals also bring some sort of spiritual practice into the work, because sometimes you can't actually be with the animal or have physical contact, so then you can work, you know, through spiritual realms. And so I did some study with a shaman some time back, and also in regards to how I related to the animals that I worked on, because I was working with so many different types of animals, it was helpful to me to kind of get perspective of what my draw was to those animals. Like you mentioned, you have a breed that you like. I do too. I have terriers and hounds, and it just seems like we're drawn to certain things. And so her comment to me was, well, dogs, and a lot of times dogs come into our lives to teach us about our relationships with others. And cats tend to teach us about, like outside relationships, like maybe other realms, like maybe somebody who's gone on that you still have a connection with.
Really?
And horses teach you about yourself. So I said, well, that's telling, because I have more horses than anything. So I guess I have some work to do.
So horses teach you about yourself. Cats teach you about your relationship with the spirit world.
Mm-hmm.
And dogs teach you...
about your relationships with others.
With other people.
Other people that are already in your life.
Oh. So my sister, when she was a budding young psychologist, said that a dog is a a reflection of the aggregate personality of the family, which at that time was a terrifying idea in my family because we had an insane Irish setter who actually went through the picture window after a census taker at one point. That was just one of his personality quirks. What would you say to that? Is that still true? Is a dog a reflection of the aggregate personality of the family or what?
I think a dog is it a reflection of itself. And the more we can try and understand that spirit and how that spirit fits into our family, kind of elevating it to not just something that we see when we come home from work or, a creature we take out on hikes, that kind of thing. But what meaning or what benefits are you getting from that animal? And how are you best supporting that as a member of your family?
That's really important. We're talking with Lola Michelin and Wendy Dahl. Lola, Education Director of Northwest School of Animal Massage. Mm-hmm. Wendy Dahl, an animal behavior consultant. What would you like to leave our listeners with about animal massage today?
Well, I would say one of the common questions I get from people who have not had experience with animal massage is like, well, isn't that just petting my pets?
Yeah.
And I always tell them that, yeah, that's one of the most important things you can do is pet your pets. And it's a form of massage. So we strongly encourage people at every level to incorporate massage into their animal relationships. So if it's you doing the massage, then it'll be a basic form of massage that helps with your bonding with your animal. And if you use a professional, there'll be a little more sophistication to the process because they'll bring different tools. And it's a lot like, it's a lot like dental care. Like you're kind of responsible for brushing and flossing your own teeth, but from time to time, you need to go and get somebody to do a more thorough cleaning so that hopefully you can avoid the dentist. But in worst case scenarios, you end up at the dentist. And massage is kind of the same thing. You should be doing some yourself and you should be using a professional from time to time. To help with getting better results, and when necessary, then the veterinarian becomes part of that picture too.
We have 1 minute left. Wendy, was there anything you wanted to leave our listeners with?
What I've learned from my experience as a practitioner is that I can certainly come into that massage session with what I've learned and what I might bring to the animal, but it's also the benefits that I'm receiving as well. So for me, it's a circle of benefit.
Yeah, I think we could all relate to that. Mm-hmm. Petting my dog is one of the most relaxing, uplifting moments of my day.
Absolutely.
Cuddling with my dog is, and she tolerates it. I want to thank you both.
Thank you.
We've run out of time. I do believe that you offer small classes individuals who just want to learn to help their pets. How do we find out about that, Lola Michelin?
You can go to our website, nwsam.com, and you can look for our Fundamentals of Animal Massage class. And we offer them every other month on a Sunday, and you can spend the day with other pet lovers and learn some basic tools and see if animal massage might even be a career for you.
That's wonderful. Thank you both much for joining us. We're going to have to revisit this animal behavior question, thanks to Steve Allen. Steve, thanks for joining us well today. You've been listening to Real Talk on KVSH at 101.9 FM, Vashon Island, Washington. And I want to let you know that next week, we're going to talk about Time for Science, Not Silence. It is a march that the Earth Day Network is organizing in Washington, D.C. We're going to have some folks from Earth Day Network tell us all about that. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned to Voice of Vashon. Dove speaks at noon.